You're listening to the Broadway Belters podcast, where we sit down with some of Broadway's brightest stars to learn more about their journey behind the scenes. Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Broadway Belters podcast. I am your host, Nick Ferreo, and I am so excited to welcome our guest today, Miss Neysia Thomas. Neysia has been seen on Broadway in Beautiful, the Carole King musical, and Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations. Next fall, we will see her return to Broadway in the revival of Caroline or Change. Welcome, Neysia.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. I'd love to go all the way back to the beginning here of your journey. Can you tell us about where you are from and how you found your way into theater growing up?
Yeah, I was born in Queens, New York, up in Virginia. So I went to this school in high school called the Governor's School for the Arts. And it's like a secondary school, I guess, like a magnet school. So I went to regular high school during the day for the day. And then I spent the rest of the day until 5 o'clock, like from 2 to 5 at the Governor's School, where I received free training in music theater. The Governor's School has like different, you have like a theater department, vocal music, visual arts, tech department. They have all of that. And it's for free for high schoolers. Actually, Adrian Warren, Rashida Scott, Grant Gustin, Van Hughes, Mary Faber, Anthony Wayne, Patrice Covington, they all went to the Governor's School.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
We just graduated at a different time. My mom made me audition for the Governor's School. I didn't want to go, but she was like, you know, you need to do something with yourself. And so I like accidentally ended up there, and I did a show. I did Into the Woods when I was 15, and I was like, okay, this is actually fun. So I guess I'll continue to do it. I think I'm okay at it. So yeah, so I did that. I graduated 2011. I went to Elon, got a BFA in music theater. And before I graduated, I booked the national tour of Beautiful, and that's how it all started.
And that's how it all started. Well, that's a nice story. What was the first Broadway show you saw? Do you remember the first, you know, theatrical experience you had that really, you know, piqued that interest for you?
Yes, I do. The first show I ever saw on Broadway was Annie, and Nell Carter was Miss Hannigan. Oh, and wow. I, at that moment, had, right, I had no idea. So my grandma, thank the heavens for her. She was the reason why. She is the reason why I do what I do. She took me every single summer, every single school to a Broadway show. And I didn't know at the time that Nell Carter was playing Miss Hannigan. And I always remembered the story of me sitting in the front row, the curtain going down, and this, you know, this thicker Black woman bending over and waving to me while the curtain was going down. First of all, now I understand what it means to bend over low. So I appreciate that. But then I realized it was Nell Carter. And I always felt like, you know, she was giving me her blessing to do this. So that was my first Broadway show experience.
You got all the good stories already here. Wow. So like you said, your first big job out of school was the national tour of Beautiful. Can you tell us about how that journey started with the show and what your audition process was like?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I don't recommend this to anyone, and I can't believe that I had the guts to do this. But when I was in college, I emailed Stephen Copel. And I said, I heard that you guys were right. Oh, yikes. I was told that I could do it. I got his email from a friend. So I emailed him. And I said, I heard that you guys may be looking for African-American females for the Shirelles. Is there any way that I can audition? And he said, so do this, send in this video. From the video, he took him to Final Callbacks in New York. So I was still in school. And actually the day of my final callback, I had another audition for Book of Mormon. And but it was also the last performance as a senior. Department head, Kathy McNeil, she said to me, Neysia, you can go, but you better be back here on time. Because everything was supposed to happen in the morning. So I should have been able to fly in and fly out. I get there, I do my final callback, and what happens? Flight canceled.
Oh no.
Changing airports. Flight canceled again. So I'm sobbing, Kathy's, you know, I'm calling her. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it to collage. And for some reason, but thank the universe, I was able to get on a flight going to a different airport, landing at a different airport, having one of the voice teacher's kids pick me up from Greensboro. And she drove me to Elon. When that plane landed, I got an email in my inbox saying, you booked the tour. Oh, that day, I got the email. I'm speeding on the way there. I'm crying, all this different kind of stuff. I'm texting my friends. I'm like, guys, I booked it. You know, while the show is going on, I walk in. It's intermission. I walk in. Everybody is there screaming, cheering me on in the lobby. Hugs, tears, and then I walk right on stage to start the second act. So that is something I will never, ever, ever forget. And that's my story of the national tour.
Wow. That's awesome.
I booked the swing position. Yeah. Right. So like throw me into the hardest thing I've ever done.
That's what I was going to say. So then you're like a fresh baby right out of school. What was the most shocking thing about working in theater that you learned once you graduated and started the job?
That all moving parts move fast. And it was really a test to work ethic. And even if you think you have good work ethic, I love organizing things. So, you know, I had my little tracks and my little notebooks. I was always finding new ways to do my tracking sheets. I had cues. I had all of that. So I enjoyed doing that. But no matter how like prepared you think you are, it is something else being thrown into that show. You don't have time to really look at your cue cards. You don't have, you know, I could stick them wherever I wanted to stick them. And I found little pockets to double check and check. And I also knew them, but it's like, there's nothing like actually being thrown on the stage. Now, I only got to perform the show 3 times before I was moved to Broadway. I was only on the tour for 6 months and I only did 2 tracks. And those were kind of the easiest tracks. The grown woman tracks, like the Shirley, Will You Still Love Me, and the Janelle. They're like the mama tracks. So those were a little bit easy for me. And they sat in a lower space vocally. Yeah. So, you know, those weren't as challenging. But yeah, I would have to say it tests your work ethic for real. Like you have to make sure you are on top of everything or it won't work.
Absolutely, for sure. So Beautiful, like you said, was ultimately the show that gave you your Broadway debut. What do you remember from that very first night on Broadway? Was it an adrenaline rush and a blackout? Or were you able to take a moment that night and kind of say, oh, wow, I really made it. This is happening. Were you in the moment, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Let me tell you how that happened. So I was supposed to make my Broadway debut on a Friday or something like that. Someday I was supposed to make it. Let's just say I was supposed to make it on a Friday.
Okay.
On Wednesday, little Nasia Thomas was in the costume in the wardrobe room getting, my costumes, just like the final stuff. Mm-hmm. 2 girls called out. No, it might've been 3. I'm not sure. So enough people called out for them to come downstairs. The stage manager comes downstairs. He doesn't even talk to me. And the stage manager says to the wardrobe supervisor, are Nasia's costumes ready to go on tonight? And I'm sitting there like, can you ask me if I'm ready to go on tonight? Because I'm supposed to have 2 more days of rehearsal. But luckily I think they felt that they could do that because I came from the tour. So I already knew it, quote unquote, but I never did Little Eva on tour. She was my secondary cover. I wasn't first choice. Yeah, I was a first choice. I mean, obviously when they gave me the call that I was going to be doing it, I had to hurry up and, you know, start rehearsing that track, but I wasn't used to that. Mm-hmm. So I got thrown on 2 days early. My family was not in town yet. I asked, you know, I texted one of my best friends and I'm like, I have to go on tonight. I have to go on tonight. And they, you know, ended up giving him a ticket to watch me, you know, go on that day. But what I did was I only did the Little Eva specialties and the swing did everything else. So I did I think I just did Locomotion, and then I bowed.
Oh, wow.
And then I did that again the next day. And then I made my full Broadway debut the 2 days later.
Oh my gosh. What a unique story. That's so interesting.
I have stories.
I mean, girl, we're only 10 minutes in and I'm already hearing three amazingly deep, interesting stories. I am along for the ride. My next question is, what was the most surprising thing about Broadway that you learned, that was different from tour, if there was anything that you didn't expect?
One, coming from being a swing, I wasn't in shape to do 8 shows a week yet. My first 8-show week, I fell out.
Oh, wow.
Matter of fact, I started later in the week. I don't even know if I had a full 8-show week before I fell out. Wow. My first weekend, that first Sunday, I was dead. You know, the stamina. I remember the associate choreographer was like, Nasia, this song is a beast and you basically need to start running on a treadmill and singing these songs. You have to start singing these songs on the treadmill. But my body still didn't know what it was like to, you know, do the numbers, go do the costume changes, you figure out how much time I have in between. I'm pretty sure I didn't even eat that much, you know, during that whole thing. Also, you know, doing the magic costume change, the little Eva change, right? Practicing that, you know, all of that, nothing could have prepared me for what my body was going to feel like, on top of not just like the physical stress, but like the mental and the emotional energy that's all going in and coming into play. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Doing 8 shows, doing multiple shows.
How long do you think, or do you remember it taking you to finally feel comfortable in your run on Broadway, like settling into that, getting used to that routine, all of that?
Yeah. You know, I always get the most comfortable right before I'm leaving. I always feel course. Like, oh, dang, now I'm having fun, because I am an extremely heady person. So I'm so hard on myself, and I know I gotta slap myself on the hand for that, because that does nothing but hurt you. But yeah. Man, I spent so much time just like making sure that I was doing okay, that I kind of like, even though I had a lot of fun and I was in the moment, but you know, I don't think that I ever allowed myself to become satisfied with what I was doing. So therefore I didn't like, you know, I guess feel 1,000% comfortable. Maybe I was 98% comfortable.
Okay.
But maybe I wasn't 1,000% comfortable. And that wasn't up until I was leaving for the first time for Ain't Too Proud, the world premiere. Yeah.
Okay. Looking back on your time with Beautiful, I guess this kind of goes along with that question, but you know, it was your first experience on Broadway. What do you think was the most important thing you learned about yourself exiting that show?
I think I learned that I just needed to have more fun. that I learned that I am someone who is very... I am too concerned with how I am coming across on stage, which is, I think, so important for me. I'm so heady. I am so heady. And I learned that it does me no good. And I just need to allow myself to have more fun. It is a privilege to do what we do. It is an honor and a privilege. So who am I? How dare I sit there and allow myself to sit in a little bit of darkness because I'm scared of what people will think? You know, how dare I? How dare I? I learned I need to loosen up. And I found ways to do that. I found little tiny ways to do that. But me being human, I always found myself back in those, oh gosh, I'm about to do Locomotion. I always get a little bit of gas when I'm nervous. And I mean, there were times that I didn't have gas doing the Locomotion. And those are great moments. But for the most part, I always knew if I was truly, truly, truly allowing myself to be free, if I didn't have those little bubbly guts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something that I'm still fighting this day. Ain't Too Proud. I had that same thing. Like, oh God, I'm scared. What if people don't think that I'm a good Tammy Terrell? What if I, you know, and I developed so much of a complex, and that's no good.
Right.
That
right.
is no good.
Yeah. But I think so many people think that, you know, once they see you up on Broadway, oh, they can't be nervous. They're on Broadway. They can't be judging themselves. They're on Broadway. But Everyone does at the end of the day.
Everyone does. And if they say that they don't or haven't experienced it, it's a fib. It's a fib. We're humans. Mm-hmm. We're human.
What's Talking Too Proud? You did the pre-Broadway productions of that show at Kennedy Center, Berkeley Rep. When did you first get involved? Was that early workshops, readings? When did you first step into that world?
Yeah, the first reading in January of 2017. So I actually auditioned for Ain't Too Proud in 2016 in like December. And I remember being at Beautiful. One, before I even auditioned, I remember being at Beautiful and all the brown girls, all the Shirelles were getting auditions for this show called The Detroit Project. And I said to my agents, I said, I'm brown and I've done 60s stuff. Here I am in Beautiful. Can I get an appointment for this? And, you know, the next day I went straight to the dance call. I didn't even sing, which is a terror for me because, honey, you don't need to put me in no dance call first. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was my last time doing it. Oh, you tell me I can't sing first? Oh, I don't know about that.
We said no more dance call.
Right. Ooh, no more dance calls first. I have to be able to let them know that I am worth something, okay? And I can't do that if I don't sing first. But I went to the dance call, you know, did the callback, and I went to sing and did a couple more rounds of that, got all the way to finals. And then I got an email saying, the team loved Nasia, but we can't find a fit for her right now. And this was just for the workshop. Okay. So, you know, I, you know, everybody was getting their little calls at Beautiful, and I was walking around like this. Yeah, it's okay because there's a reason. It's okay because there's a reason. It's okay because there's a reason. So I remember I was doing a recording for my friend Douglas Lyons, who is a big Galaxy star. And I got an email saying from Mary Sugarman, Merry Christmas.
Good old Mary Sugarman.
Good old Mary Sugarman. Merry Sugarman Christmas. And that was it. Somebody had to go do another show. She couldn't do the workshop. So I ended up, they ended up bumping people. And then I ended up.
Oh, sliding right into that.
And then, and then from there, it's history, you know? So, you know, I got a no. And then the universe gave me a yes. And I'm so thankful for that no, because maybe I would have been somewhere else if I didn't hear it. But I had been with the show since the first reading.
The very first. How did that show evolve over time and become what, you know, the version that we know now? Did your material change a lot? Was, you know, what was that process?
Yeah. So I started the show just as Mama Rose in One of the Supremes.
Okay.
From the reading to the world premiere. And then ensemble, Prisoner Number 5, Little Boy, Bar Groupie, all that stuff. And then for Broadway, the playwright, she was like, listen, we need to feature the girls more. This is a show about the Temptations, but the Temptations wouldn't be where they were if they didn't have these influential women in their life. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they gave myself and another character a song. So for Berkeley Rep, they ended up giving one of the other characters a song. So I ended up bumping to, somebody left the workshop, the parts changed again. And then I ended up having Tammy Terrell added to my track. Tammy Terrell in Berkeley Rep didn't have a song. They gave a song to one of the other women and they were like, okay, for Broadway, Nage, we're gonna give you this song. So at that time at Berkeley Rep, we didn't know that we would have to go on a mini tour because there were no houses available at the moment. So they ended up adding it for the mini tour for the Kennedy Center, LA, Toronto. So I got that song built in with the David Ruffin character. And they had to make some cuts in other places in order to build that, put that song in for me, which I'm so grateful for because I know that every little second, every little lyric, every little everything counts. So for them to make space for me is, I bow down. I'm so grateful for it. Yeah. So, you know, songs changed, lines, costumes, got new wigs, such like that. But for the most part, it all stayed the same.
Okay. Okay.
Just enhanced it a little bit.
When actors are playing people who exist or existed in real life, there is that added pressure, I guess, of doing that person justice. What research did you do and how did you find your portrayal of Tammy Terrell and Florence Ballard?
Let me tell you something. It was a long, long, long journey. When I come back to you know, the being in the head and the complex. I was scared because one, I don't look like Tammy Terrell, number one. And two, I don't sound like Tammy Terrell. You know, I originally wasn't Tammy Terrell in the workshop, you know,
right.
The, you know, the role, the universe, because everything is always planned out before we even know it, already had me in mind for that part, you know? So I had to figure it out. I beat myself up and down, left and right, up and down Broadway and 46th Street, feeling like I couldn't do this part justice because I didn't look like her. I didn't sound like her. But then I had to remember, Nej, this was something that you were meant to do. So there's a reason why you had to do it. So I had to figure out how to find the spirit of Tammy Terrell. Maybe I don't sound like her, but can I show her spirit? And, you know, I read her book, the book that her sister wrote. I spoke to Tammy's sister on the phone. You know, wow. She told me, I know, you know how that happened. Someone is doing a Tammy Terrell movie and they reached out to me and said, we're going to come see the show. And I was like, oh, you're going to come see the wrong one. You're going to see the wrong one and not what you want. But because of that, I was able to get in touch with the woman who was, you know, she's working on the movie and she was working closely with the sister. So I was able to get her sister's phone number and then talk to her from there. Wow. Never met the sister. I don't think she even came to see the show. Okay. And sometimes it's hard, you know, Otis didn't see the show all the way through until we did it at Berkeley Rep. He saw only the first half because it's painful, you know, to watch stuff like that, especially his son passes away in the show, you know, so it's hard. But I, you know, I was lucky that I was able to speak not directly to Tammy, but also feel like I was speaking to someone who was very close. And I just had to, you know, try my best to highlight her spirit and her flavor and her fierceness. You know, the thing that I have learned about Tammy Terrell was that she was a spitfire, you know, and she was strong and she was funny. And it's like, if I can nail that, and there were people who came to see the show who are big Motown fans who appreciated what I did, you know, regardless of how I sounded. And I mean, it was a lot of pressure, but at the end of the day, you're always called to do something. And there's a reason why you're called to do something. So do your best at it. You know, no matter what. And if I ever get to do the role again, you know, maybe I'll be able to dig deeper in and find more pockets. But as long as I am representing who she was, the impact that she made to the best of my ability, then I'll feel okay about it.
Absolutely. Ain't You Proud attracted a lot of celebrities, people of that era mm-hmm. to the show. Do you have any favorite moments or interactions you've had with icons that have come to the theater?
MJ Rodriguez came. That's always for me. I started to cry.
I didn't know that. Oh my God.
Yeah. You know, people like Oprah came, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, you know, Angela Bassett for Ooh. Me. Yeah. I would have to look through my little photo. You know, I have a little photo album of all the famous people that I met, but those are the ones who come to mind.
Cool. Did anyone you said Otis came in Berkeley. Did any other people from who are in the show around, you know, siblings or family, you know, did they come? Did they share their thoughts with you about what they saw?
Yeah. Okay. So we never really have because we didn't play Temptations, you know, some of the people who have the honor of having their character still alive, you know, I'm sure that they felt some, you know, passed on things. Well, Mary Wilson, she came. She was not the biggest fan of the Supremes choreography. She thought it was a little too hippie, a little too booty, you know, but, you know, choreographers always had the hard task, especially when you're portraying, you have to, you know, set choreography. You have to bring these characters into the present while still honoring the past. So, you know, there had to be a little bit of hip. You know, and we're also hippie girls. So, right. You know, especially me, I'm hippie. So Mary Wilson, you know, she shared her thoughts. Smokey Robinson came, which was also like one of the big ones for me. Melvin Franklin's daughter came and I spoke with her because I played her grandmother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she had such nice things to say. The Josephine character, she hasn't seen the show yet, who was Otis's wife. So we don't know really about her. But, you know, Otis was the last, he's the last living temptation.
Yeah.
We've had like David Ruffin's family, Eddie Kendrick's daughter came. Yeah, that's, I think that's really about it for the people who are still with us who came to see the show.
This was also your first original Broadway musical. And so much comes along with that that people I don't think know. Your morning shows, the Tony Awards, all of the press, everything like that. Was that overwhelming for you? How were you able to like find balance in all of the extra stuff that you have to do when it comes to putting up a new Broadway musical and also still giving 110% at the theater every single night?
Yeah, I mean, for me, because I wasn't a temptation. During Tony season, those boys were working, you know, especially the ones who were nominated for the Tonys. I don't know how they were able to do it. And, you know, you still have to come in. It's not like you can say, I have to take a break during Tony season. You have to come in because the voters are there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, it was just all a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, a lot of dreams coming true, a lot of bucket lists, a lot of 5-year goals coming true in just one season. You know, I was having fun, but I also had to sit back and say, goodness, Nay, like, look at these things. Make sure that, you know, time is fleeting. Make sure that you are living in these moments and you're not taking anything for granted, because stuff like this doesn't really happen this like in one season over a few months. Ridiculous. You know,
yeah.
I had to also, just for keeping up with body and voice, you know, there were mornings we were getting up really early. So I had to make sure that I was getting to bed, because even if we are part of the ensemble, we still represent the show and there are no small parts. Mm-hmm. There are no small parts. So everything that we did mattered. Every person and every movement that we made mattered to the success of the show. So I, you know, had to make sure the vocals were up to par, water, not talking if I didn't need to talk. I am the queen of shutting up and putting on a little vocal rest pin. I am the queen of it. Right. No why. Everybody wanted to go out on a Saturday night. Oop, I can't. Sorry. Tony voters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, I found a good balance of fun and also get yourself together.
Looking back on all, you know, your time with Ain't Too Proud, what are you most grateful for?
Man, fellowship. The amount of times, and I'm especially grateful for the girls' dressing room. Man, there are only 5 of us. There are 4 of us in the show. And it was just the way that we had to hold each other up, because it seems at times, you know, nobody's really thinking about us. You know, it's only 5 of us. The show is called The Temptations. You know, we can't make too much noise, you know, air quotes, we can't make too much noise. But, you know, the girls who have gone through so many things physically, emotionally, mentally, and I would not have survived without Rashidra and Candace and Taylor and Esther. I would not have Tanika, Tiffany, you know, more like we would not have survived because we had to hold each other up. There were moments of tears and literally holding each other up, because life goes on, you know. Deaths, you know, sickness, all of that. Just having people to lock arms with is just so important.
Yeah.
So I would say definitely the fellowship.
Prior to the Broadway shutdown, you were, I think, one day away from starting preview performances for the revival of Caroline or Change. First, I would like to know how you all got the news that things were shutting down. Were you guys all at the theater? Like, how did that play out?
Woo, we were getting ready to run the show. We were actually in a note session. We were about to run the show again, because we had an invited dress rehearsal that night.
Right.
I had just went to buy 6 tickets for the first preview for my family. And we were sitting down and, you know, these articles were popping up. And the company manager and people saw that, you know, people were like looking at their phones, were like, excuse me, something's happening. And they were like, please do not pay attention. We are the ones who give you the official word. So at that time, there was already an article saying that Broadway was going to be shut down. Yeah, we were still in rehearsal. So we got called into the stage manager's office and they're like, what do you want to do? Because at that time, you couldn't have any more than 50 people in the audience. So technically, we were still good to have an invited dress. But people were concerned. So we were in the stage management office and, you know, the little kids were crying. They're like, some of us were like, we need to get out of here. And the little kids were like, do we really want to end on this note? Don't we want to do the show one more time? And, you know, I understood exactly what they meant. And now that I think about it, what I would give to have done the show one more time. But at that moment, we were like, we need to go. And also it's, you know, some of us who had been working for a long time, I know a few of us were like, all right, I don't mind the break, because we were just supposed to be gone for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, that happens. We went to the bar. We got some wine. We're like, okay, I'm going to get paid to sit down. You know, let's grab a bottle of wine, my little glass from the dressing room. And we like bar hopped with the creatives. And, you know, people were like, okay, well, maybe we should get planes home back to the UK, because yeesh, it looks like we might get stuck. So people were, you know, I'm sure trying to book tickets and such like that. But we really thought that it was just going to be a couple weeks. So we were cool. We were like, okay, let's take the break. Let's rest right. The vocals. And then it just kept getting pushed back and back and back. And like Carolina Change, I appreciate them because they were on top of it as far as this is what's realistically going to happen before any like official Broadway league. It's going to be June, blah, blah, blah. They were like, we're going to push to fall.
Yep.
And then when the September thing came out, they were like, we're going to actually push for spring. Mm-hmm. And then when the summer came out, they were like, we're going to push for fall. So we kind of already had like while people were, I don't know what we're, you know, when our show, we kind of knew what was our fate. And but they were like, listen, there's no way we're not doing this show. And okay. Especially with all of the movements, the Black Lives Matter, all of the killings, everything racial, you know, going to the fiery pits of you know where, mm-hmm. They were like, there, we can't not tell this story. So y'all don't worry about going anywhere. And I'm grateful for that because so many shows shut down. Mm-hmm. So many shows didn't know that they were playing their last show the day before. Yeah. I'm grateful to have a home to go back to.
Absolutely.
And I'm grateful that we're going to tell this story because history should not have to repeat itself. And it is. And you know what? It's going to continue to repeat itself until we get ourselves in order. And hopefully, you know, our uncle who's going to be in the the White House, you know, can help with that. Uncle and auntie. But yeah, it's going to be Please. Important to tell the story. Right.
I want to skip to a question. I was going to ask you, why do you think that people need to see this revival right now? I know, but for people who may not know the show, this is the first time they're hearing of it. Maybe they weren't, you know, they didn't hear of it the last time it was around. Why should people go see the show when it's back?
Because you know what I love about Broadway? You go in, and then the same thing for kind of the Temptations. You go in that theater thinking that you are going to have a jolly old time, and then you're smacked in the face with knowledge, and you have no choice but to sit there, and you have no choice but to eat it up. And lucky for you, you get to eat it in a way that provides a spectacle. Some people don't have that luxury of understanding what racism is through a Broadway show.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. This show deals with so many things. It and mostly just the idea of change, and how we can move forward, how we should move forward, and sometimes how we don't have the ability to move forward because of the circumstances that we're in. And I just think that it's going to be good for people who may not have, you know, maybe have no idea, especially the younger. It's important for the younger generation to see this because maybe their minds, with the quotes, aren't made up yet.
Yep. Yeah.
It's important for them to see how people were treated back then and to also have a lens as to how it's happening right now. It's important for these 10-year-old kids who are maybe not brown or black, you know, coming in to see these shows who maybe come from families that don't want them exposed to those types of things. It's important for them to sit down and see this, you know. And Caroline and Change, it's a heartbreaking story.
Oh my gosh.
It's hard.
It's heavy.
it's very heavy. And that's what I'm most looking forward to, changing people's minds. And maybe changing minds of people who thought they had their minds made up. You know, somebody, I remember this guy named Too Proud. He came to the show and he sobbed. And he was like, I grew up in a small town in Texas, not being exposed, being taught things about Black people, being taught things. And I sat here and I'm changed, sobbing, apologizing. Oh, gosh. I mean, we were all like,
I just got chills.
Man, you know, so could you just... And that show, listen, Ain't Too Proud slapped you in the face with racism, but yeah. You know, it didn't sit in it. It sat in it, but Caroline or Change actively sits.
Mm-hmm.
And actually you stay yeah. in it. So yeah. I'm excited for potential change, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So you may not have gotten that, you know, to do a performance yet, but you did get to be in the rehearsal studio with all of this incredible mm-hmm. creative team and the cast that is just so stacked. What was your rehearsal process like? And how will this revival of Caroline or Change differentiate from its original production?
So I didn't see, I've only seen just like a couple of clips from the original, but I think, first of all, the rehearsal process, I mean, one of the warmest, that first of all, the cast, legends, okay?
Legends.
Chip, yeah, I said, I'm doing a show with the Baker.
The Baker. Baker.
You know, such incredible talent in that room and the warmth to back it up, the warmth, the knowledge, first of all, the creatives, Tony and Janine, man, you know, But it's so humble. You know, we sat in circles for hours talking to Janine and Tony. It literally felt like auntie and uncle again.
Wow.
You know, learning from people, just a safe space, a fun. And I was the dance captain. So, you know, my rehearsal schedule was, you know, me doing the show. Usually dance captains are covers, you know, so they're mm-hmm. off stage. So me doing rehearsal and then going off in the corner and trying to notate and also doing the show, but also trying to see what the other people are doing. So just in case I had a note, you know, for that, or I had an adjustment, you know, I learned so much about my craft, period, having to be able to double that, well, balance it. But, you know, I'm so grateful that everyone is so kind. Sharon is, you know, I heard that Sharon was going to be a lovely, lovely woman, but Sharon D. Clark is a beast, number one. And she's one of the kindest, most down, most earthy people I have ever met in my entire life. And learn from her every single day is a masterclass. I mean, it's always a masterclass with everybody. I think this show, I appreciate it. It kind of like got updated a little bit.
Okay.
And I think that the creatives, you know, especially Janine and Tony, I wasn't there in that original room, but I think that they are changing things and little tiny things or speeding up tempos or doing this, but they are very serious about this time being the correct time for Caroline or Change. They kept saying like, this is going to be our time. Maybe it wasn't our time back then, because also I think people took that show for granted. Mm-hmm. It's also the year of Wicked and all these things. People weren't ready for it.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Now we're ready for it. And now we are going to exist in this moment. And we're not playing any games about existing in this moment, because you have to hear it.
Mm-hmm. The Broadway shutdown has obviously been devastating to, you know, this community and its livelihood, but it has also given us a chance to kind of take a step back and have these important conversations about a desperate need for systematic change and racial equity mm-hmm. within our own industry. What do you hope to see when Broadway reopens?
Oh, gosh, so many things. Lack of microaggressions. I just want to see, and maybe this is just so simple, I just want to see, first of all, accountability from all of the people that I'll say this, tried it in this industry, but also just like, just an effort. Can we just start at an effort to understand? We need to start hiring. Also, we need to start hiring people of color. More people of color need to be in these theaters, backstage, on these creative teams. We need to open up spaces for us because, listen, we do things well, okay? We do things well, and it's a shame that we have not had the space. The people have been there, and it's a shame that we have not had the space given to us yet. And it's a shame that a movement had to happen for you guys to understand. And some people still don't understand how they've been wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I would also like to see this whole colorism thing get out the way. I'm a dark skinned woman. I'll just say this. We need to make space for brown people of all colors, not just the ones that are palatable. We've seen too much of that. Mm-hmm. We're going to get a black or brown person, but we're just going to make sure that they're light and they look appealing to the eye. I'm sick of it. As a dark skinned woman who has not even in some rooms, there were people at tables who didn't even look up at me. There were times that I was told, you don't have the right look. There was a specific show that hadn't had a black woman in a specific track. And I was told that I didn't have the right look for this track that had nothing to do with race. There are shows that are still very heavily racist. Absolutely. And I'm waiting for the day that somebody's going to call them out. I'm waiting for the day. I'm waiting. Woo.
Absolutely. I am happy that so many people have come out and shared their stories and not felt, I think because we're not working, that they haven't felt the weight of the power of the industry. They feel comfortable, mm-hmm. which is horrible that exists, but that they can finally feel comfortable in sharing things. But I think we all know that there's still a lot of more, there's a lot more stories that people still don't feel comfortable sharing because money and power and everything else, and people don't want to. People feel this pressure to not ruin their careers over with, you know, people mm-hmm. who have power. It's like, whatever, I could go on a rant about it forever.
Listen, I get it. I have seen it firsthand with, you know, people being in positions with people of power and taking their crap because they're afraid to lose their job. I have seen it firsthand.
Gotcha.
And it's horrendous, the amount of things that these people in power are getting away with. But maybe, more, you know, the revolution will continue to go on. I hope so. I hope so, man.
What advice would you give to anyone listening to today's episode that dreams of a career on Broadway?
You know, that Broadway is another stage if you love to do what you do. All things happen at the right time. Don't pay attention to speed. Go slowly. I would say go slowly and soak up everything that you can soak up, because if things are meant for you, there's no way that you cannot obtain it. Broadway is just another stage. If you love what you do, I can't express that enough. I feel like, and maybe it's easy for me to say this, or it could be easy for me to say this because I have been on a Broadway stage. I've had that honor, but everywhere is Broadway. And if you continue to treat it that way, you will have no choice but to soar. Everywhere is Broadway. In the middle of Pennsylvania, in that haunted theater down the street, that's Broadway. And if you can give yourself that mentality, you will get to extremely high places. If you have that brain, if you have that mindset, if you know that everything comes in your time, if you know that when someone says no to you, it just means you have to go another way. And that it could be the greatest thing that ever happened to you if someone tells you no, because it sets you up to be somewhere else that you never expected you'd be. And maybe that place was for the better. Mm-hmm. Believe in yourself. Know that there is no one out there like you. Know that there is no one in the world who can do what you and your body and your energy and your universe, your whole everything can do. Tell yourself that you're beautiful. Look yourself in the eye. Sometimes it's hard to look yourself in the eye because we're humans. Tell yourself you're beautiful. Stop being so hard on yourself. Celebrate yourself. Know that you will get where you're supposed to get. If it is meant for you, you will have it. You will have it. Work hard. Eat what you want to eat. Stop being so hard on yourself about what you look like, because you are perfectly and beautifully made. You are perfectly and beautifully made. And that's something I struggle with myself, especially during this pandemic. Mm-hmm. Lord have mercy. You know?
Whew. Yeah.
Take
yeah.
a break. Celebrate yourself. It all plays a part into your success. It's all mental. It's Absolutely. All mental, because you could be the most talented person in the entire world. But if you're not up here, if you're not heart and mind and soul connected and happy, if you're not heart happy, mind happy, soul happy, it's not going to work out. Mm-hmm. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself and you will soar.
I feel the goosies. Soar. I love that. That was beautiful.
You have no choice but to soar.
That was beautiful. And I love when you said that, you know, Broadway is everywhere. Theater is essentially the same. Broadway is just a set of circumstances. Like, it's a huge accomplishment. Of course, it's the pinnacle of theater, but it is just a different set of circumstances. So you got to carry that love of theater and the love of the art all the way through and not get so
everywhere. Exactly. Everywhere. I don't know, so many people. And like I said, it might be weird hearing it from me because I've been there, but so many people are like, if I don't get to Broadway in X amount of time, I am nothing. Child, you already been on Broadway. Listen, now, if you're talking about money wise, understand, I have to get to Broadway because, you know, it's going to pay the bills. But like, if you love what you do, it doesn't matter if you're standing on top of a trash can in the middle of Harlem.
Mm-hmm. The art is still the art.
The art is still the art. Don't rush. It's going to be there.
It's not going. It's taking a break, but it's not going anywhere.
Remember that one time you said that? Probably not going anywhere. I guess it is. Oops.
But yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Nasia, for sharing your journey with us. This was awesome. So much fun. So informative. Thank you for being so open and honest.
Man, I appreciate you for asking me to come on and talk.
Well, it was my honor. So, so happy you decided to join us. Thank you so much. Hey, Broadway Belters listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, you can help us out by subscribing and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also follow us on Instagram at BUA Belters Podcast. And if you're feeling extra supportive, go ahead and share today's episode with a friend. The Broadway Belters Podcast was produced today by me, Nick Ferreo. Thank you for listening.